You know, there are about 1,500 Wisconsin Service members who are missing in action, or MIAs, as we like to say. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Now we're going to be talking to the folks who work real hard to locate our MIA soldiers. The team at the University of Wisconsin Missing in Action Recovering and Identification Project is the name. And our guest today is Dr. Ryan Wibben. He with me in the studio. He's the team physician for the MIA program. Dr. Wibben is a clinical associate professor with the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. He's also an emergency physician in the Burby Walsh Department of Emergency Medicine. Dr. Wibben works full-time with the UW MedFlight program and has also been the medical director of MedFlight since 2008. So as we talk with him about the work with MIAs, I hope you'll join in. Did you or your family relatives serve in World War II, for example? Tell us what you know about your family history of serving in the military. Number to call is 800-642-1234. It's 800-642-1234. Or you can send us an email. The email address, ideas@wpr.org. ideas@wpr.org. Dr. Ryan Wibben, welcome. Thank you for taking time to be with us today.
Thank you for having me.
So I think the mission is, in a way, it's self-evident, but give us the full mission of the UW Missing in Action Recovery and Identification Project.
So the UW MIA program is it's a multidisciplinary, multifaceted program that works closely with the Department of Defense. And the specific agency within the Department of Defense is called the Defense POW MIA Accounting Agency, or DPAA. And they are specifically tasked, if you look at their website, with providing the fullest accounting of all the missing since Pearl Harbor. And that's a specific indication there is just from World War II on. So all of our conflicts that the United States has been involved in since World War II. And they have been working on that under various names since the 80s. It really evolved out of the Vietnam War and to try and provide the fullest accounting of the missing and POWs from the Vietnam era. But that rapidly expanded to involve both Korea and World War II and other conflicts since then.
I think there were still 26 MIAs, something like that, from Vietnam.
There's quite a few as from Vietnam as well.
But as I looked on, I went to the page that describes the UW program, and I looked at the map of Wisconsin, which is really interesting, and there are dots, some bigger than others, but the whole state is covered. And I'm talking about MIAs.
Correct, yeah. If you look at the map that we have on our website, or if you go to DPAA's website, there is not a county in the state of Wisconsin that does not have a missing service member. And if you look conversely at the world map, it is hard to find a part of the world that does not have missing Wisconsinites. And so it is truly a worldwide endeavor involving Wisconsinites from all over the state.
It was just amazing to me to look at that photo, the slide of the state, which I didn't know what to. I felt really bad. I felt terrible looking at that.
Well, this all is an endeavor that probably should have happened decades ago, but because of the advances in DNA technology and also just more of a mandate from our government as well, there has been an enormous amount of effort put into this over the last decade or so. And our program came into being at the end of 2015, basically to use military parlance, as a force multiplier to assist the Defense Department in these endeavors around the world.
So how is this funded? How are you funded?
Well, we, as an organization on campus, we are basically unfunded. We have a little bit of volunteer funding, or we have some donations that come in. We have a close relationship with our colleagues from the VFW and the DAV and Rolling Thunder and various veterans organizations around the state who have been enormously supportive of the work that we do. And that has allowed us just a little bit of wiggle room to do some work focusing primarily on Wisconsinites. The bulk of the funding, if you will, is primarily focused on specific cases that we as a team put out into the field to excavate archaeologically, primarily World War II aircraft crash sites, to recover the missing air crew from those crash sites. And for those, we are fully funded by the Defense Department, the DPAA, to go out and do those cases. But the vast majority of our work is primarily based on volunteer time and donations to our group.
And what is your official role in this?
Officially, I am the team physician. So officially, my role is when we're out in the field. And so we as a team try to replicate Defense Department, what are called organic teams, that are put together by the Defense Department that involve active duty service members who are led by an archaeologist. So we are essentially replicating that kind of a team, but rather than active duty military, we're using undergraduates, graduate students, and things along those lines, and also volunteer staff like myself. And so we have a team of undergraduates and graduate students. I'm the team physician, but everyone on the team has multiple jobs in terms of we also all work full-time at the screens, at digging, or doing what we need to do on a site itself. So we all have multiple jobs. And my undergraduate degree was in anthropology and archaeology, so I'm quite familiar with an archaeological site. And basically, I'm coming back around to something I started off with as an undergrad many years later.
So the project's primarily focused on MIA soldiers from the European theater.
To this point, correct.
Yeah, of World War II. How many are there in the European theater, do we know? And how many are from Wisconsin?
Tens of thousands. I'd have to look at the specific
wow.
heat map. There's tens of thousands of missing U.S. service members.
Yeah.
That does include Wisconsinites all across Western Europe. We have Wisconsinites who are missing in France, Belgium, Germany, you name it, and Poland. We have missing Wisconsinites all over. Curiously enough, many may not realize this, but those who may know a little bit about military history, the most missing Wisconsinites are actually in New Guinea. And that is because of the 32nd Infantry Division, who was sent to Buna, New Guinea, in 1942 and 1943 as part of MacArthur's New Guinea campaign. And that was a National Guard unit that had many Wisconsinites.
Oh, yeah. And the Red Arrow.
The Red Arrow Division. And so it was comprised of members across the upper Midwest, but, of course, many Wisconsinites. So by if you look at a heat map, for example, of where the Wisconsinites are missing, there's a big spike in Buna, New Guinea, for example.
And I'm trying to remember, I think there were, I was trying to remember how many lost their life, or how many MIAs we had from that 32nd. I think there were
quite a few.
Yeah, there were something like at least 70, 68, 70, something like that.
Yeah, and what is actually a very small area on the north coast of New Guinea.
And you haven't been to that?
We have not ourselves been to that site. Defense Department has been to that site, or sites, I should say, along the north coast of New Guinea as part of that campaign. There are ongoing endeavors to try and narrow down, as you can probably imagine, when the small combat action in the jungles of New Guinea, if someone went missing, they were very hard to recover. So, and one of the big points about all of this is that there is a tremendous amount of historical research that goes into trying to narrow down exactly where an archaeological team should focus their efforts because you can't dig everywhere. So the historians play a huge role in all of this to try and narrow down as best as can be humanly possible to where we should go as an archaeological team.
Remember watching a movie about that campaign, and there was the Triangle area in New Guinea, they called it, which was sort of the battlefield where that most lives were probably.
Yeah, it was relatively speaking, you think of places like Normandy, which is a whole province in in France. This was in a very constrained small area that was very very dense jungle. So yeah, the environmental challenges of an excavation in that kind of place can be imagined.
And the as I looked at that state map, I was looking at the size of the bubbles, which gave you an idea of how many were lost in a particular area. And of course, Milwaukee is a big number, and Madison is a pretty good number. And then I saw Janesville, and I thought, wow, why is Janesville such a big number?
Yeah, there was, it spans all across the state. I mean, you would imagine the places with bigger populations will have more. I mean, if you can even look at Door County, and Washington Island has a missing service member as well. So it spans across the state. The Janesville example is a specific to the Philippines campaign. There were National Guardsmen who had been sent to the Philippines early, actually, I think even before World War II officially even started for us, before Pearl Harbor, and they were garrisoned in the Philippines and got caught up in the Philippine campaign, which resulted in the surrender of Corregidor and Bataan and MacArthur leaving and all of that. Mm. The disaster that happened in up through April of 1942, and unfortunately, a bunch of soldiers from Janesville got caught up in that as well.
The Janesville 99, I think.
The Janesville 99, correct.
And many, two-thirds, three-quarters of them were lost.
Right. There was a notorious prison camp called Cabanatuan, which is a mouthful to pronounce. That was the main POW camp the Japanese had on the main part of outside of Manila. And the problem there was that many died over the course of their imprisonment as POWs, and the accounting, they were buried in mass graves on almost a daily or weekly basis. And then going back afterwards to try and disentangle who was who provided a significant amount of challenges in the pre-DNA era. So many of them were eventually ended up being buried as unknowns. And that's also a big component of what we do as well, is the historical research, not just going out into the field doing archaeological like an aircraft crash site, which is the dramatic thing that we do. But there are other cases where if you go to any of our national cemeteries, such as one that everyone thinks of is the one at Omaha Beach that was in Saving Private Ryan, that cemetery, which is right above the beach there, has many unknowns, and many of our national cemeteries have unknowns who are physically present, but they don't have a name associated with them. Through historical research and then subsequently kind of narrowing it down to a potential match from that you could exhume those remains and do DNA testing on them, you could then convert that unknown missing soldier to one with a name and who could be buried underneath a headstone with their name on it.
We'll invite our listeners to join in. If you have a question or comment or maybe an experience to share, maybe you have a friend or relative who became an MIA. Love to hear from you. The number to call is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us the email address ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Talking today with Dr. Ryan Webben, who is the team physician for the MIA program, also a clinical associate professor with the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. So your work, as we said, we were talking about earlier, your work has been mostly involved in Europe.
Correct, yeah.
And so what is the process of something like this?
It's a pretty involved process by which the Defense Department, in conjunction with the various academic partners, of which we were the very first academic partner in 2016, where the Defense Department took a chance by partnering with us at the University of Wisconsin, and subsequently, because of the success of that first case, launched a whole slew of additional academic partners for the Defense Department. So if you look online now, there are literally dozens of universities and NGOs who are partnering with the Defense Department to go out and do these cases, of which there are 82,000 missing spread out across the world. So there's plenty of work to go around. But we were the first, and so we take great pride in the fact that the success of our very first mission allowed the rest of that to happen. But to get to the question, the processes involved, I mentioned the historians who have to do a tremendous amount of work to try and narrow down. Many of them are relatively straightforward, and I use air quotes on that because the processes involved.
And I want to get more involved in that involved process with you, Dr. Wilbin, and we'll do that. We'll take a quick look for now at the news and find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network, and then we'll continue our conversation about Wisconsin MIAs. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're talking about the University of Wisconsin Missing in Action Recovery and Identification Project. Dr. Ryan Wilbin, our guest, he's the team physician for the MIA program, a clinical associate professor with the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, also an emergency physician in the Burby Walsh Department of Emergency Medicine at Wisconsin. And as we talk with him about the work that is he and others as part of the University of Wisconsin are doing to locate and identify Wisconsin MIA veterans, I hope you'll join in. The number to call is 800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Or send an email to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. I think it'd be interesting to talk about that. You know, you got permission or were allowed to go off and try and find someone.
So it's as I was mentioning before, it's an involved process to get a team to a very specific site to excavate and then hopefully find the remains of the aircraft to then find the remains of the missing crew member that you might be looking for and who are unaccounted for. The process to get to that point, though, involves a tremendous amount of historical research. There are things that were written usually the day of or the day after an aircraft went missing called missing aircrew reports that were typed up by the squadron when an aircraft failed to return, which involved the who, what, why, where, when sort of things. That's a starting point, but then that can be very not very precise as to where, especially over occupied Europe, which exact village or town amongst many for an aircraft that's at 20, 25,000 feet and then was seen to go down, but then trying to pinpoint exactly where is a challenge. Following up on that are eyewitness statements from missing aircrew that maybe after the fact, if they returned on other aircraft within that squadron, many of them are based on returning POWs. So if you were in an aircraft or in that particular aircraft that got shot down, you may have been able to bail out, but you were taken prisoner, but you weren't able to give any statement until probably 1945 or 1946, if we're talking about World War II. So many times the available information trickled in over time, and that's been collated over time. But then you have to put that all together by the historians, start to try and narrow down exactly where an aircraft went down. The Defense Department, and also we have done this as well, will send out scouting teams to talk to local mayors, politicians, especially in places like France. The first place you go to is the mayor. That's just the culture of how things administratively work in France, for example. Landowners, and that's where the mayors can help kind of put the lien on landowners. Many landowners, in their defense, though, are very happy to provide our teams to go in. They are compensated by the Defense Department for any lost crops or anything along those lines.
Yeah.
But to be honest, we have had great success and very warm and cordial relations with the landowners that we've interacted with in France and Belgium in our work so far since 2016.
Well, you know, if a plane goes down, I mean, under those circumstances, they weren't, they didn't have cell phones with,
yeah,
I mean, it could be a
GPS.
Mile or two in a circle, and that's a lot of area. So this sounds like an involved process, but relying on people and people's memories. And
memories you have to take carefully with people's memories.
Yeah.
Our first, one of our cases in France, we had a landowner who was insistent that it was in, this was a P-47 of Lieutenant Frank Frizikas from Trenton, New Jersey, who had been shot down right before D-Day. And fast forward many years, almost 80 years, and the landowner had kept a certain part of property thinking that it was that field. He was actually an eyewitness when he was a child. Oh. He had seen the aircraft go in on that Saturday afternoon in May of 1944, and he was insistent it was right there. Fast forward, Charles Kanzitsky, who is the associate director of the Biotechnology Center here on campus, hired a German firm that does ground-penetrating radar, where they went over the field looking for magnetic hits, and there was nothing there in that particular field. Through a long process, this was weeks before we were about to send a team to dig in that particular field, the Defense Department came to our rescue and helped us out because they were able to find British reconnaissance photos that actually put it in the next field over.
Oh.
And just for a variety of circumstances having to do with land ownership over the years and changing field lines and property lines and so forth, he was essentially correct that it had crashed north of a particular farm lane, but the lane had actually moved with the property lines as things had been sold over time. So you get into post-war land plat maps and all sorts of things to try and narrow down. We would have essentially wasted weeks excavating in at the wrong field when it was literally 50 or 100 yards the wrong direction on someone else's property.
And so you had to go to the other person.
So we had to go to another landowner. And so it's an involved process. And so that's what we refer to in that case. But we were eventually able to excavate that site, found the remains of the aircraft, found machine guns almost immediately. And that's important because there are serial numbers that were written down on those missing aircrew reports. So we knew it was this particular
plane.
And then eventually, as we got down deeper and deeper into a very complicated terrorist excavation, to the remains of the pilot himself, Lieutenant Frizikas, who was eventually repatriated to the United States, identified with DPAA's Central Identification Lab, and is now buried at Arlington National Cemetery.
You know, Nancy in Milwaukee called, couldn't stay with us. She's wondering why people want to bring the missing bodies home instead of just letting them rest where they were.
In some circumstances, that's not necessarily an option. You know, if there's construction going on or the progress of development and so forth, we uncover or bodies are uncovered, and that's just not an option. But really, I would defer the answer to that question to the families themselves. And overwhelmingly, the families of these missing want an accounting of their family members. And whether or not that would involve bringing them back to the United States and burying them in the local family plot, which has happened with one of our cases, also a P-47 crash site of Lieutenant Walter Stone, who's now buried in a family plot down in Alabama, or Lieutenant Frizikas, who was brought back to the United States and buried in
Arlington.
Or sometimes there are options to bury them at the national cemeteries that we have around the world as well. And so that is really a question for the families, but from my limited experience interacting and interfacing with families, there's an overwhelming desire by them to account for their family members and bring them home.
How does recovering those soldiers, and you've had now some firsthand experience, how does it affect surviving members of the families?
Primary relatives who are still alive, the wives, the parents, especially of the World War II generation, different with Vietnam, of course, but even then, Vietnam-era veterans are, their parents are getting up there in age as well, if they're still alive. And so there's a ticking clock with regards to surviving primary family members. And certainly with a son, so Lieutenant Fizikas's son was involved with our case. He was actually an Air Force veteran himself. And so it has a profound effect on them individually. And we have actually found that even relatives like nieces and nephews and so forth, cousins who may not necessarily have even known the person because they were killed before they were even born, have a very strong family connection and a very strong desire for the accounting of what had happened to their relative. So even for family members who may not have even known them, it's an overwhelming, strong desire.
And you were telling me during the news, actually, that this is, for the United States, we kind of stand alone in some ways in this process?
We do. In my opinion, a fascinating and very interesting cultural difference amongst various countries. We repatriate, generally speaking, we will repatriate our missing and bring them back to the United States. Commonwealth countries who were our allies in World War II, if you go to Commonwealth cemeteries in anywhere in the world, when they recover their missing, and they are actually different in that they don't actively seek their missing, but frequently, especially in France and Belgium from World War I and World War II, they frequently uncover their missing. And I've been involved in projects from World War I as well. They will bury them in the local Commonwealth War Graves Commission cemetery that is local to that, where that casualty was recovered. So that we stand alone in that we will repatriate them back to the United States.
Daryl in Milwaukee has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Daryl.
Hello. Good afternoon. I'm wondering, your program's bent seems to be towards finding service members through the Air Force. I have an uncle who died in the USS Keita submarine in World War II. Is there any leaning towards, you know, that kind of missing service member?
Well, we are non-denominational with regards to various casualties. We have focused on air losses, as we kind of colloquially call them, because they have, generally speaking, a lot more documentation associated with them, especially with ground losses from the Army or the Marines. There is frequently not as extensive documentation where an individual may go missing. There may be after action reports and things like that, but trying to narrow down where an individual on foot may have gone missing in the immediate aftermath of a combat engagement can be very, very challenging. Having said that, we also have done reports for family members on missing from sea losses as well, both air and naval vessels that have been sunk or went missing at sea, including submarines. We have Wisconsinites who are on one of the deepest shipwrecks ever discovered, which was discovered from one of the actions of the Battle of Leyte Gulf in 1944. The USS Johnson had a Wisconsinite, and that was actually just discovered recently I don't remember the exact depth, but it was a very deep depth off the coast of the Philippines from 1944. Many of those losses, of course, will probably never physically be able to be recovered because of technical challenges and so forth and money, frankly. But what we can do in those circumstances is provide basically a closure report, if you will. This is what happened. Many family members don't even realize or know what actually happened, even with naval losses, to that ship. And so that ship was part of the Battle of Samar, or Samar Sea, which was an action in 1944, kind of a famous action. and the ship was sunk, but many family members don't know the details, and many family members don't have the expertise or wherewithal that many of our volunteers, historians, and undergraduates here on campus have of accessing the archives, the National Archives, to find out those kind of that kind of information. So we, in circumstances that allow, with our limited budget and our volunteer nature of our organization, we can try and provide after closure reports for family members for even sea losses.
So in Daryl's case, with a relative that went down in a submarine, how might he? Maybe there is a report somewhere.
There very well could be. And in fact, there have been submarines recently discovered as the part of archaeological, underwater archaeological excavation or surveys. And I know just off the coast of Thailand, a USS, a U.S. submarine was recently, within the last 5 or so years, was recently discovered. Now, that doesn't mean that it will be recovered or the remains will be recovered, but in many instances, at least a known resting place is known. And that is about as best as you can do in a circumstance like that. So, we mentioned that of the 82,000, the 82,000 missing since Pearl Harbor, roughly half of those are probably at sea losses and may never be recovered. But in some circumstances, there have been aircraft that have been shot down in lagoons or in atolls in the Pacific. A TBM Avenger with 3 crew members was just recovered by a partner organization called Project Recover that we have an affiliation with as well. So it's not impossible, but certainly you can imagine the challenges are much, much greater in that circumstance.
Thinking of water, I was thinking of the Escanaba.
The Coast Guard cutter. Correct, yeah, and that had Wisconsinites on it as well.
Quite a few, I think.
Yeah, a very famous instance of, may have been the largest loss of Coast Guard casualties during the Second World War. That was what exactly caused it to go down, either a torpedo or possibly a mine may have sent it to the bottom during the Battle of the Atlantic, escorting Atlantic convoys off of the east coast of the United States.
Yeah. Daryl, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate you. So in the end, Daryl, could he go online someplace?
There's a tremendous amount of information online. If you know your relatives, well, certainly a name, there's a offshoot of Ancestry.com called Fold3.com, which is a commercial website. You have to subscribe to it to get in there. But there is a tremendous amount of information about, that's one of the things that we go to just to get kind of the basics. Mm-hmm. And also there's a tremendous amount of information online as well.
Daryl, thank you again. Jim in Boston emailed, were the Sullivan brothers ever recovered or listed going down with their ship? That was a famous...
The Sullivan brothers, that was early in World War II. The 5, I believe, brothers that were served together on a ship, which resulted, I think, in a lot of changes in DOD policy or War Department at that time policy with regards to brothers serving together. To be honest, I don't know. I don't believe that they were ever recovered. Their name lived on with a subsequent destroyer that was named the USS, I think, the Sullivans, named after the brothers that served later in World War II. So their name lived on, but I can't answer whether or not they were recovered themselves.
Kimberly emailed, are there opportunities to volunteer with this project? Are they only interested in volunteers with specialized skills?
We have a variety of volunteers that help us around the state. We're purely a volunteer organization,
right.
So we're not paying anyone anything, including myself. But we have a variety of volunteers. If you go to if you Google University of Wisconsin Missing in Action, that should bring up our website. And there is a link on there to sending us an email. That will connect with those of us, the leadership of the organization, and our volunteer student leads as well. We have students on campus here And one of the historians affiliated with our project also teaches a seminar as part of the Department of History here on campus at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. So we have a lot of undergrads, so we try and kind of hook them in at an early age. To and once you set that hook, people get, it's detective work. I mean, it really is detective work to try and quote, solve these cases. And so we certainly can use whatever help we can get.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll put a link, I think we have a link up on the Larry Mueller Show page. If you want to go to ideas at WPR.org/Larry, I believe Clara's got that link up already under our comments section of today's date. Well, and she just sent me a note. Yes, I do. So it's up there. So you've got one other project. You got a project going on right now, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, we finished up a multi-year project in Belgium, outside of a town that many may know called Bastogne, Belgium, famous from the Battle of the Bulge in 1944, in 1945. This was an air loss. I can't go into great detail because one of the things that we also have to be very careful about on the front end is raising expectations for family members prematurely. So we can't get into the name of the individual and so forth, but suffice it to say it was an air loss outside of Bastogne affiliated with the Battle of the Bulge. That originally had started back in 2019 and had been interrupted, of course, by COVID. And then we were finally able to get back into the site and pretty much pretty sure that we've successfully completed that project as well. And so now we're in this limbo land about what our next project may be. Our ultimate goal would be to solely focus on missing Wisconsinites. And we've tried, you know, fundraising in that regard to try and focus solely on Wisconsinites, which is obviously an ulterior motive of ours and a goal of ours. But we are non-denominational in the sense that if the Defense Department sends us out to recover another New Jerseyite or another Alabaman or whoever, we will go out and start working that case as well. So it kind of, we serve at the pleasure, and if the Defense Department sends us out for someone who's not a Wisconsinite, we will, of course, oblige and work on that case. But we would certainly like to focus on Wisconsinites.
And you're a volunteer. Why do you do it?
Well, like I said, with the undergraduates, once you set that hook, the detective work, and there's nothing, I have personally been down at the very bottom of an excavation site recovering remains myself in my hands. And once you have that experience and then subsequently follow up with a funeral with the family at Arlington, you're hooked. There's nothing quite like that.
Well, you're doing wonderful work, Dr. Rubin. Thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. And again, we have more information on the Larry Mueller Show page, and I hope you'll go to it. Dr. Ryan Rubin, team physician for the MIA program, and he's also a clinical associate professor with the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Great to have him. It's really interesting to learn what's going on for our Wisconsin MIAs. Thank you for listening. Tomorrow's our sports program, so we'll be zeroing in on a couple of things, volleyball and Pilates. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.